Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I am your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where we talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, it's my privilege to talk to Brett Kelly yet again. Brett is known as an Evernote master or guru or whatever buzzword you want to apply to him. And we talk about Evernote for sure. But before we get into that, we actually have a conversation about a failed project that Brett put out. I'm not the only person saying that. He also says it as well. But the key piece here is that he shares what he learned from that failure in terms of being known in one space and creating something in an entirely different space and moving over to that area for something you create and you want people to notice it and you want your work to be seen and heard and even bought. And yet when that doesn't happen, what do you do? So we have a very open and honest conversation about that for a while. Then we move into something else Brett is working on right now, which is very cool and even wowed me in the process of the conversation, which is his Master Your Mac email course that he has. I love it. I have been doing it. You'll hear during the conversation that he wowed me and it was completely unplanned. And then I signed up for it on the spot. And I have, honestly, since this conversation, been thrilled with it, more than thrilled with it, in fact. So, and then we jump into Evernote and do some tips and tricks there. So that's what's in store for you for this conversation on this episode. And before you get into that conversation, I want to say thank you to Nosby, my task manager that helps me get my tasks and my projects done. Not just me, but over 300,000 other busy people and teams. I've been saying this for, I don't know, how many episodes now? You got to try it out. Nosby has been so generous that they are giving you, as a listener of this podcast, the opportunity to jump on for free for 30 days, Nosby Pro, a Nosby Pro 30-day free trial. All you need to do for you and a partner to get that, that's like two accounts in one, all you need to do is go to nosby.com/TODO. That's nozbe.com/TODO. Here's the clincher. Even if you're somebody who is already using some other task management system, if you're like me, you've tried a bunch of them, but you owe it to yourself to try Nosby 3, which has been out a few weeks, few months now. I'm loving it. A lot of others are loving it. Again, the versatility and ubiquitousness of being able to capture and attack tasks from anywhere is just awesome. You got to check it out. Again, even if you're already using some other task management thing, go check it out. Go sign up for that trial. You'll be glad that you did. nozbe.com/TODO. And when you do it, let me know that you did through the show notes to this episode, beyondthetodolist.com/130. And I will send you my Nosby template for my morning routine and a few other bonus ones. All right, let's get into the conversation with Brett. This week, it is my privilege to once again welcome back Brett Kelly to the show. It's been too long. Welcome back.
Thanks, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. It has been, I had to look it up.
I blame you.
I accept that blame. You've been up to a lot, but also more living life than it has been like doing tons of like work that's been out there. But we'll talk about the stuff you have been doing. A couple different things. And like I put in the pre-show, I flip through your Instagram and I see basically inking, vaping, and cooking.
Yeah, those are the three activities that occupy most of my discretionary time these days.
Yes. And then so, and then there's the working. So and that's right. What this show is supposed to be about. So I guess we should probably talk about that. So those are
if we
actually,
have to.
Actually, let's start here in a really random place. Since I know you're into cooking and you're also known as one of the Evernote guys or gurus, did you ever use Evernote food?
Yes, extensively.
Okay, so yep. It's going away. What are you doing?
Yeah. Dude, I love that app. I was so sad when I heard they were going to shutter that thing.
So how are you going to deal with that?
I suspect I'll just stick with vanilla Evernote and weep quietly each time I, tell tips some olive oil out for Evernote food. But Yeah, it'll you know, I'll live. It was, you know, it wasn't such a tragedy that I'm thinking about, you know, ending at all. But yeah, it was a bummer.
So that's probably the worst opening question I've ever done on this show.
Well, I made a suicide joke right after you said it. So if you want to compare failures.
Okay, well, let's go there. Since the last time that you were on the show, you came out with another book that was all about not Evernote.
Right.
And that's probably the best correct. Way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And it tanked, and you said so yourself, and you've blogged about it. But let's go through some of what you figured out in terms of that. Let's set it up. Let's tell the story of what it is, why it was a failure, and any thoughts you've had since you came out with that being a failure.
Okay, so it's relevant that I was a cigarette smoker for 15 years. Over the last couple of years, I've adopted the electronic cigarette habit as a replacement for traditional cigarettes. And something that if you know anything about it, it's not super easy to get into. You'll walk into one of these stores and want to buy something that you can I just want to stop smoking cigarettes. Give me what I need. And you'll pay $100 and you'll walk out with this contraption about which you know very little as far as the internals and how it functions. So I spent a lot of money, a lot of time trying to figure out how these things actually worked. And I thought, you know, this could be useful information to give to other people who are along the same, you know, on the same trajectory I was. Mm-hmm. So I thought, all right, I can bang out some short little, you know, 10,000 word guide on like just how they work, how to shop for them, like the basics of like the electricity and the physics involved, which I had to learn because I'm an idiot. And just also the social kind of what it's like to live as a vapor. I historically have hated the word vape and vaping. I still don't love it, but it was whatever. It's the word we agreed on as a society, so we call it that. So I wrote this book and ended up being not much longer than I thought, about maybe 20,000 words or so. I guess it was double that what I thought. Anyway, and I called it The Art and Science of Vaping. And so it's two halves, the art, which is just like, well, I did it in reverse order, the science, which is like how batteries work, how Ohm's law, you know, how the different bits and bobs of it function and how just to make sense of it. And then the latter half is just how to do it, like what it's like to sit at a bar and be the guy vaping and not the guy smoking, or, you know, that kind of stuff, lifestyle stuff. So I wrote this book and launched it in right before Christmas last year, and launched it to my, you know, I emailed my customer list about it, my newsletter list, and got really like a really crappy response. Like, you're the technology, like productivity guy, and you're writing about smoking. Because a lot of people still conflate the two, right? Like electronic cigarettes and cigarettes are the same thing to most people. Yeah. You're still smoking. And which it turns out a lot of people think is really gross. So they were like, dude, you're sullying your name by writing about such a tawdry topic. And you know, you should be ashamed of yourself and you should take this book down because it's making me not want to buy everything else you sell. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow. That's harsh.
Yeah, that was not the like uniform response, but there was a lot of people who said something similar. So that was not fun to hear.
Well, I saw it, but, and I said, oh, well, that's just not for me, but good on you for making something. But you know what I mean?
That's what I hoped the response would be from people who weren't interested, but there are some pretty vocal people out there. And it was, you know, to be honest, it was something, because I've been writing about, I mean, I had put out four versions of the Evernote book by this point. Written about all sorts of technology stuff. I just wanted something different. I wanted a new, like, separate project that I could just sort of sink my teeth into for a while. And that's what it was. And I'm proud of it. It's a good book, I think. I think I've sold like 100 and something copies over the last year. It doesn't sell very well. I still like one or two a month.
There are people though that hear that and they're envious of your 100 something.
Right. Right. So. Well, I mean, the only thing I have to compare it to is the Evernote book, which did way better. So, you know, and at the end of the day, it ends up being like a couple hundred dollars worth of revenue from these monstrous sales that I was doing. So anyway, like after I shipped it and after it totally fell off the edge of the pier, I was like, okay, so why did that happen? And I realized and I blogged about this, like you said, but basically it came down to a couple things. First, I tried to enter a market where I had no credibility, no authority, and no presence whatsoever. So I was trying to sell to people who knew me for one thing, but I was trying to sell them something completely different. It's like I walked into the, you know, the auto parts convention trying to sell like vacuum cleaners or something, and everyone would look at me like, what are you doing here? This is not you, whatever. So that was point number one. Second, I sort of assumed that there would be enough like overlap between my audience and people who were in the process of investigating electronic cigarettes, which is the, okay, let me stop right there. That was the stupid mistake I made, was the product itself is flawed in that it's the target market is people who currently smoke and who are investigating electronic cigarettes as an alternative. And that is a very narrow window of time for people. Either they switch or they don't, or they just straight up quit smoking altogether.
Right.
So I'm trying to find people as they're passing through this one frame, this one frame of life that lasts maybe a month, and hoping that this will be the thing that maybe helps me. It'll be helpful if it finds them there. But in terms of a product and a business, like, it's just a terrible idea, because there's not going to be, I mean, maybe there will be people who end up buying this thing, I don't know. But the market is so small, and the time frame so narrow where I'm supposed to find the market for this product. That was the main business reason why it was a terrible idea, and it still is a terrible idea. But basically those two things. No presence in the market, and a fundamentally flawed idea at the start.
So what was your expectation going in? Did you think there was going to be a lot of sales or something? I mean,
I thought so. Well, I was counting more on organic kind of Amazon traffic. Right. And I had, the Evernote book is already for sale there. It won't be for much longer probably, but it's already up there. And I have pretty good, author rank. I got a lot of reviews on my other book, and it does well. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe, I don't know how Amazon's internal dingus works. Maybe it'll promote my thing because the other thing does well. No idea. Or people will just search for vaping and find my book, because there were only three other books at the time, and now there are dozens.
True.
So I don't know. But my expectation was, I spent more time writing this book than I had planned to. I wanted to crank it out in a month, but it ended up taking me four.
Oh, wow.
So whatever. It was a weird time in my life. But got it out and was hoping, all right, I'm just kind of letting this thing go I hope it does well, but didn't have any real expectation of how well it would do.
Okay.
And it turns out it did fantastically poorly.
Well, and again, you're pulling up your expectations then up against the experience of what you had already done with the Evernote book,
right,
which was kind of a unique thing. One, you were known in that space and you did already have kind of a following, but then also, Evernote liked you and you worked with them. So it's
right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I've long tried to disabuse myself of the notion that I'll ever have another success like the Evernote book. Because frankly, it's that was such a wild, out of nowhere, still can't believe how well it has done.
Yeah.
So the other things I make, while I hope they achieve some moderate level of success, I don't think they'll ever be as popular as the first thing I made. So I'm not walking around hoping to make another Evernote book. I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. So
yeah. So it's been a year since then, though, since the fail or the fallout of the fail or whatever you want to call it. But
right.
How has that changed your approach to creation, in terms of how you think about approaching, that might be an idea. Well, is it worth it? Do I even try? Those kinds of doubts.
Yeah. I think, the first takeaway, the primary takeaway is don't try to sell stuff related to a topic you've never talked about. Really. I mean, I put it on Instagram about it sometimes and I tweet about it occasionally, but that's nothing. I never wrote blog posts about it. I never did anything kind of official about electronic cigarettes. So it's like, okay, well, people know me for a certain series of things, right? A small set of topics. And if I want to write about something different or produce a product related to a different topic than those small set of topics, I need to spend time, maybe half a year or more, beginning to explore that topic more publicly and write an article about it on my site every couple of weeks or a couple of months, and just kind of see what the reaction looks like and see what kind of traffic it gets, see what kind of reaction it gets, because there's no way to know without testing whether or not people are going to be into this thing that I want to make. And I've got plenty of ideas of products that I want to make and sell that aren't related to technology at all. But having gone through that once and learned my lesson, I'm going to be a way more kind of circumspect about just closing my eyes for 6 months, cranking something out and lobbing it into the ether and hoping it does well. I'm going to be a little more of a grown up about it next time.
So do you feel like you've got to immerse yourself into whatever the cultures or, make relationships with the people that are already in those areas of those, products that you're considering?
Maybe. I don't know. It's like, honestly, with the electronic cigarette thing, like, I'm not a part of that community at all online. Like, I read the subreddit about it every now and again, and I follow a few people on Twitter who talk about it, but I'm not, you know, no one would know who I am if you just said, this guy, you know? And frankly, like, I'm not super interested in that. Like, I'm an enthusiast for sure, but I'm not interested in becoming like an active part of that community, just because I don't really have the time, and I'm perfectly happy with my level of involvement at this point.
Gotcha.
But for other stuff, it might be prudent to do that, or I don't know, maybe not. Or just expose my audience to it a little bit more, and like I said, kind of see if they're into it. At the end of the day, I'm running a business.
Exactly.
You know, like if you walk into a Walmart. A lot of crap for sale other people don't care about that work there. You know, the guy who works at Walmart does not work there because he loves the fish tanks. He works there because he gets paid. And now I write about things that I care about for sure. But I also have to go, okay, well, how can I, you know, I've got to feed my kids here. So, and as far as if my own ethical qualms about entering a market purely to sell to it, like, I don't, okay. That there's a market. Like, I'm a guy who makes things and I have certain skills and certain talents that I, and certain things that I care about and things that I like. And if I can find the intersection of what I'm good at and what other people are willing to pay for and things that I like, then okay. Like, I'm not ripping anybody off. Like, I'm providing real value for what I'm, you know, what I'm asking. And if, you know, and of course no one's holding a gun to anybody's head. If they think I'm a charlatan for, you know, entering the vaping market or whatever, trying to sell them a product and they don't have to buy it, you know, no problem. That's fine. But as far as my own kind of, how I feel about it, I'm like, you know what, we could all be a little less Gandhi about how you must be absolutely true to like your innermost passion when you try to make something and sell it to people. Because it's, you know, I don't know.
Everyone, no, I totally,
it frustrates me.
it's that whole altruist, we've got to be on our altruistic motives at all times. I like that you just said we could all be a little less Gandhi. That is the tweetable quote from this episode. But I totally get it. And again, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate here because I've had these same thoughts where it's like, oh my gosh, you know, if I wanted to do something outside of the productivity realm, then to get people interested in it, you know, do I need to go do this or that? And, you know, how where is the line? And is there even a line? That's kind of where I was going. So,
yeah, totally.
And I think we need to stop thinking about that too much because, again, if you're somebody who is doing your own thing and you're making your own stuff and you're doing it to, one, because you want to make good stuff, great. But two, if you want to make something off of it, that's a whole other story. And they're not mutually exclusive, but you got to think through the process, I guess.
Well, so. And it's not necessarily, I guess the assumption that I want to challenge is that making something that is not whatever, what you're known for, like me with the vaping book, I'm not at odds with any kind of ethical anything. Like, I'm just going to make this thing because I care about the topic and I think it's interesting and I think there's a market for it. I think there's value in what I'm making. And that's enough for me to like want to do that and think, okay, well, like I could, and if I, you know, start hanging out on like ecigaretteforum.com or whatever and make myself known there as someone who sort of knows what he's talking about and then go, hey, I wrote a book that you're, you know, you won't need because you're all enthusiasts, but your aunt and uncle might like or whatever. Then, oh, I see. You were just, you know, you were using us to, you know, build a platform for what you're trying to sell. It's like, I wasn't, you know, I guess I could have said that at the outset, but I don't know.
Well, so you, in between the book and now, what have you been working on? I know that you've got something brand new, which is not completely off the rails from what you were already kind of working on. It's in the productivity space.
Right.
And it's all about mastering your Mac. And when I saw that, I said, oh, that makes sense.
That was me kind of, you know, in the wake of the the vaping books fiasco, kind of going, all right, what's something I can do next that's more in line with what my audience would expect from me? And what's something that I know pretty well that I could, you know, make and educate? Because that's the thing. I boiled down what I'm decent at to distilling and explaining things, especially technical things. So that's like, all right, well, this fits perfectly with that because I'm not writing – Mastering Mac isn't about like how to right click and how to, you know, do very basic stuff. Like that's all assumed. It's more like for, you know, people who are around my age who use Mac like for work or they use one regularly enough to where they know the basics but want to do the basics faster and want to learn more of the kind of 201 level stuff. So Yeah, it's basically what it is. It's a, I call it a premium email course, which is kind of a goofy marketing thing to mm-hmm. say, but it's $5 a month. You get an email every week with some, like, it's like a blog post linked article about some interesting thing you can do with your Mac that you probably didn't know you could. And the response has been really, really good so far. And I've got content for eons.
Nice.
Because the Mac is a really intricate, and it's, the easy stuff is really, Apple makes it really obvious how to do most things. But what you don't see is the ways that you can do all sorts of other stuff and the ways you can, I don't know, automate and kind of tweak and work faster with the Mac. So that's the kind of material I'm attacking. So
yeah, I used to be through and through a Windows person, mostly because it was cheap to get a Dell at home and I had Windows at work and I did not have a cell phone other than a flip phone for a long time. And then I got an iPhone, I got an iMac, and that's not this, or not an iMac, a MacBook, the white one. Mm-hmm. Anyway, gradually, as all the pieces of technology that I had were getting swapped over and I went through and through Mac across the board everywhere, you know, it's like how Apple just, it's like how Apple says it just works. And it did. And that's not to say I've not had my headaches, my share of them, but it's what's worked best for me. How did you get into this? How did you get into being a Mac person?
Oh, boy. Let's see. So it was 2005, I think. Maybe 2006. I had been, at the time, I was working as a Windows developer, believe it or not, for a company around here. And I was using Linux on the desktop at home.
Wow.
Date myself just a
little
bit.
You're going all over the place.
Yeah. I was a big Linux enthusiast for like 3 or 4 years back in the day. And it was Linux is fine if you're like a computer enthusiast, but if the person you're living with is not, it causes a lot of headaches. So I was convinced that maybe we should not have Linux at home anymore. So I ended up, a friend of mine ended up donating to me an old Power Mac, a Power Mac G3, if memory serves. And so got that all set up, and I had used Macs, and I had sort of balked at Macs for years because, you know, the one mouse button always struck me as incredibly stupid and all that. And I don't know, I made fun of what I didn't understand. So anyway, I get this Mac and I start using it and start, you know, learning how things work and, oh, okay, wow, installing applications is super easy. So I was uninstalling them. So it was whatever, and sort of got better and got faster with it. And over the next two jobs, well, the job I had and the job I had after that, I was Windows all day, but I became kind of I really enjoyed using OS X. And so I bought a new white MacBook in 2007, and that was my main computer at home for
like
4 years.
Same time as me.
Yeah, those the little mm-hmm. those gleaming white MacBook.
Yes. That would then gradually turn yellow.
That's right. In a profoundly like dirty snow kind of
yes.
way. Yeah. So used that Mac for a long time, and then when I left the last job before I worked at Evernote. They were all Mac. So I went to being Mac full-time working at home, and it was wonderful. So I've been all Mac ever since, and I'm kind of the like tinkerer type when it comes to computers. Like I want to do things faster, better, mm-hmm. you know, optimize for speed and efficiency and all that stuff. So
totally.
That, you know, with maybe, 8 years of experience with the Mac, coupled with, you know, spending inordinate amounts of time like writing Apple script and learning how to assign keyboard shortcuts to obscure menu items and blah, blah, like that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
How does mastering your Mac work? If someone jumps in now, have they missed out on emails? Can they get those back issues?
No, you start from the beginning, no matter when you sign up.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Then are you willing to tease something that you've already shared or have something that's maybe in the hopper?
Let me open my Macintosh computer here, and I'd be happy to, but gotta give me a second to pull up. I want to make sure I read it right.
Okay.
Let me look up my Google Docs spreadsheet where I keep all this stuff.
And then I've got a question that I'm going to see if I can't stump you with.
Oh, boy. Love it. Okay. So the sort of litmus test, actually, you'd be a good test case for this. I know I'm not sure how enthusiastic a Mac user you are. I don't know you that well, but do you know what the Command Tilde keyboard shortcut does without looking it up and without trying it?
I do not.
Okay, so that's sort of the one question: is this right for you or not? Kind of survey that I've
okay.
That, I decided that early on. Like, if you know what that does, maybe I'm not saying Master Your Mac isn't for you, but like you're probably sufficiently nerdy to where you might not find enough value in this course to justify the cost.
Okay.
So, but I'll ruin the surprise for you.
All right.
So Command Tab lets you cycle between running applications.
Yes.
Command Tilde that. Will cycle through the windows of the active application. Okay. So if you've got three Safari windows, Command Tilde will cycle through those windows and make each one active.
All right. Which one's Tilde?
The one next to one.
Oh.
You have to have more than one window is the trick.
I thought I did. Oh, okay.
It's actually Command Backtick, I guess, because Command Tilde is a shift keystroke.
Okay, let me see. Yeah. Let me try this. There's nothing more fascinating than live tech help podcasts.
Yep.
Oh, it's oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, that's amazing. Seriously, to be able to switch, and then if I had, oh, that's very cool. That's gonna save me tons of time.
Sweet.
That geez. All right, you paid for yourself. Or, I mean, your appearance is worth its weight in Tilde. I don't know, man. That's awesome. Okay, so you're saying that if you freaked out, like if you didn't know that tip, and you want to know more, your course is for me, which it is. I think we've proven that. But if I did know that, even if I did know that, it's still for them, which obviously I'm not worthy of, but because that's the route you're going through, or you know, that's the kind of stuff that, like, hey, if there may be some stuff in here you will know, but for the most part, it's going to be stuff like that that nobody knows or isn't like commonplace or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Okay.
The stuff that's like when you sit down at the Genius Bar or whatever to get your one-on-one when you buy your Mac, and they show you how to do everything, like, this is the stuff they won't teach you. Not because it's like too hard, it's just not common enough. Like, they'll show you, you know, Command Q to quit, Command Tab to switch apps, that kind of stuff, like the basic stuff. But this is more, I already know how to do all that. I want to know how to do something. I want to, you know, want to do it faster. I want to do it better. I want to know the tricks. So that's what this is about.
That's awesome. Any others you're willing to share?
Dude. Okay.
I want people to go do it. And again, it's like what, $5 for a month and you get four plus emails or something?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
the beauty part, let me clarify one thing real quick. So it's $5 a month and the number of emails is as yet undetermined. So I'm adding to this list kind of all the time. And it will, when it runs out, it'll just stop billing you. It's not going to be like a gym membership or whatever, where it'll bill you forever until you realize you're being charged. It'll just stop charging you. But, you know, I'm hoping to have many, many dozens of these, and I've already got a lot. So but stuff like that, like the Command Tilde thing. All right, let's see. One other one. Okay. This is one of my favorite ones. I've almost never find anybody who knows that this one exists. So, do you know how to restore a minimized window using only the keyboard?
No, that would be good because I hate having to like go down to the dock and then go over to it and then click it and bring it back open.
Yep. So now the caveat here is that it only works in applications that have one active window. So if you've got 9 Safari windows, this won't work. But if you have one Safari window that's minimized, this will work.
Okay.
So you hit Command, hold Command, hit Tab. So just do me a favor, minimize one app. Tell me which app it is.
I chose Safari.
Okay, so you've got Safari minimized in the dock. So if you hold Command and hit Tab until Safari is selected in the application switcher.
Mm-hmm.
So while holding Command, also press Option. Then let go of Command.
Cool. Nice, it brought it
that
right up.
That will restore. We can't see our screens right now. That will restore the minimized window.
That's hilarious.
We're just sitting here. Bro, it's so rad.
Yeah. Got a voice for... Anyway, we already said that. All right, I'm sold. I am going to get on this list myself. That should be... the fact that you just sold me with those two things... I remember using a Mac early on and not even knowing the Command Tab thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would see somebody else do it, and I'd be like, how'd they bring that thing up that like switched between all the different like apps that were open? I want to know how to do that. That's what this is. And you've just done that with me for like two things, and I'm in.
Boom. I feel pretty good. All right. Good.
You sold me. Sold live demonstration. And seriously, none of this was planned.
Right.
I have to give that caveat. Like, all enthusiasm here was genuine.
Look, I'll send the check over in like
all right.
a week.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Like we planned. No. Yeah, so exactly. That's awesome. And so so if I jump in right now, like I'm going to, like literally I pulled my wallet out and I set it here because I'm going to do this as soon as we're done talking. When I join up, I'm going to get that very first one, the very mm-hmm. first email, and then from that point forward, and you're continuing to write them.
Yep.
What if at some point you are you going to decide to maybe switch it up, maybe have a different sequence, or maybe pull or add stuff? How does that work? Any thoughts there?
Well, I mean, there's not much I can do in terms of, well, everyone is, people who've already signed up have already received like the first handful of emails.
Yeah.
So if I start moving them around, then it's going to present a probably pretty crappy experience for them because if they're getting repeats and stuff like that.
Oh, true, true.
What I will probably do, and I should have thought this through a little more than I did, but when like a major OS update comes out, and most of the stuff is going to be pretty update proof. Like it's not they're not OS specific features or OS version specific features most of them. But if I do encounter one where like okay, this one is now obsolete because of whatever OS 10, the next version made this mm-hmm. broke this somehow. Like I'll probably put in an update, kind of like okay, well the first lesson showed you this, or the first the fifth lesson said do this. That's no longer valid. Here's how you do it in the new one, or it can't be done anymore, or whatever. But it's mostly going to be in stone from here.
Gotcha. Well, and you said it was an undetermined amount. I mean, it's like mm-hmm. once a week, but it's undetermined. So you could always give a bonus
yep.
for the month. And
absolutely.
Like, hey, OS X, I don't know, whatever the name of the next one will be, just came right. out. And, there's this mind-blowing thing I just found that no one knows about.
Yep.
There you go.
And because of the way this whole stuff is set up, like on the back end that I use, like I can just email the whole list at once without, and without interrupting the schedule if something like that happens. So, yeah.
Okay. That's cool. I like this. All right. So I'm going to get on that. And again, this was not planned, but I have to do due diligence and say, seriously, I'm joining this. You guys all need to, if you have a Mac, do you have any interest in doing iOS side of this?
The ecosystem? I've been asked that a few times actually, since I launched this thing. And my answer has always been probably not, although I'm not saying no for sure. And the reason is OS X has lots of really dark corners that – I don't mean that in a bad way, but like kind of unexplored areas that you can do stuff with. iOS is a lot more flat as far as like tricks and stuff that you have to either introduce third-party apps like Workflow and Launch Center Pro and Drafts, the stuff that can do all the inter-app communication via URL schemes. It's a little bit nerdy for most people. But beyond things like the double tapping spacebar to add a period or – double tapping on the newer iOS or the newer iPhones, you can double tap the home button, like not click it, but just tap it with your thumb and it will like lower the screen. I forget what they call that, but so you can reach the top corner without having to like reach across.
Reachability.
Yeah, that's right. Reachability. So beyond stuff like that, I mean, there's a very small handful of things that people who have been iOS users for a while would read and go, oh, holy crap. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I will. And there's the way that Apple's kind of choosing different features to work on different devices, like the iPad Pro has the whole split view thing, which I think works differently than on like the iPad Air original version, because mm-hmm. I've never been able to get it to work right because I think it's my version, my iPad's too old. But it's not like you can pull out any iOS device and all these things would work. You have to be like, well, if you have this, comma, you can do this cool thing, but if you don't have this device, this is useless to you, and with the Mac stuff, I'm trying to keep it to things that only that will work on just about any Mac that's not 10 years old.
Gotcha. Okay, so I have – well, let me say this. Is there any kind of room there, though, for, say, cross-platform – not platform, that's not the right word. But like a productivity tip on the Mac that connects to something on iOS?
I think there is.
Go there, maybe.
Maybe. Well, the way I'm selling this now doesn't mention iOS at all. And I'm trying to be careful to not be like, well, obviously you have an iPhone, because that's not necessarily true.
Right,
Some people have Macs and don't use iOS at all.
I know people like that, yeah.
Yeah. And I know people who have iOS devices and Windows computers. So it's I don't know, assuming that people are all Apple is a little dangerous, and I don't want to say, all right, I'm going to offer you this cool, you know, this awesome value or whatever for your Mac, and then be like, by the way, if you have an iPhone and an iPad, which I do, so you must also, then, you know, here's stuff you can do.
Yeah.
So I might, there, I mean, there are things that I can say, this also works on iOS if you happen to use an iPhone or an iPad, but I won't probably write much that just centers around iOS primarily and also involves the Mac.
Gotcha. Well, my question for you that I was hoping to maybe stump you with, it involves that to a very certain extent. Okay. It's the whole thing where if you have a phone call ringing on your phone, you can have it show up as ringing on your Mac.
Right.
And a lot of people, like, in fact, there was somebody who had something to do with that. They had a call coming in on their phone, and they had it their phone during a show I was recording with them through Skype. On their end, it was ringing on the phone, even though their phone was on silent. And so then it started making that noise, or it started ringing on the desktop. And
yeah.
What I was trying to figure out is there does not seem to be a way to get a notification that will pop up and say you have a phone call on your desktop without it actually ringing. Do you know any way around that? Because I kind of liked the convenience factor of being able to see it, because I rarely get actual phone calls. But when I do, they're kind of important, so I want to see it instead of, you know what I mean, like have my phone sitting somewhere else. But anyway.
I'll be honest, like I haven't turned that feature off, but I get so few phone calls. Like I have two or three scheduled phone calls a week with various people, but I know they're coming and I'm almost never at my computer when they happen. So I've never actually received a phone call from my Mac. Like it shows a little thing when my phone rings, but I've never done anything with it other than just pick up my phone, or I'll decline my call on the phone. Cause like, I hate talking on the phone. Like I seriously can't stand it. And so, I'm not saying what you're asking is impossible, but I do not know off the top of my head how to do that.
Okay. That is totally fine. I just,
crap.
I was like, man, so I did win. I win.
Yep. You won.
So
put your wallet away.
All right.
We're back to zero.
Oh, crap. Okay. So, anyway, that's one of the things for me is just like there are small little things like that, just I'm still trying to figure out myself. So I was hoping you were going to help me. Man.
Well, you've given me an idea for another lesson I can add. So
yeah,
there
you go. You can
look
it up and see if there's a way and if there's not a way. And I know that there are other, because I looked into this. I started to at least. Then I said, forget this. I have actual work to do. I'm not creating something to sell to somebody about all this like you are. And I looked up, and there are a couple of, you know, phone launcher type apps for the Mac that will allow you to, you know, dial in a phone number and make that call. You know, you plug in, you know, your earbuds to the Mac and your phone's the other end of, you know, the room or house even, and through Wi-Fi it'll make that call. So, but it doesn't fill that problem or solve that problem for me.
Right. So now, that feature has always, insofar as I've used it, which is again not very much at all, like it seems a little bit fiddly or a little bit wonky, because I'll have my iPad sitting on my right, my phone on my left, I'll be in front of my Mac, and all three devices will make this ringing concert around me, and I'll hit decline on my Mac or on my phone, and the iPad will continue to ring.
Exactly.
And I'll sit there and kind of, why won't this thing shut up? Because I already hit decline. It should know that I don't want to take this call.
Yeah.
And I'll get real annoyed.
Well, that's one of those things where I like turn it off on everything, because after a while it's just like, okay, well, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Exactly.
So there, take that, Apple.
Yeah.
You don't just work.
Although they do just work more than most things.
And that's kind of my point. Yeah.
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 They don't just work all the time, but they do a pretty good job.
I'm sorry, but yeah, I mean, I am not one to get into a fight with an Android or a Windows user.
No.
But for me, and this is what I always say, is for me, this is always what has just worked more often than not. I'm even the kind of geek who will do every time there's a new OS upgrade, like a yearly one that they've kind of moved to, like a point upgrade.
Yeah.
I will back up my computer and I will do a clean wipe and do a clean install of it, because I like it. I'm just so nerdy.
I haven't done that. You're nerdier than me. I don't think I've ever done that. I think I did it once when like my Mac was hosed, and the Apple Store guy was like, you got to remove OS 10 and reinstall it. But whenever there's a new version, I'm just like, whatever, install over the top. I do a backup first, but I'm like, I don't have time to spend a day reinstalling apps and reconfiguring things and blah, blah. I just install it, fix whatever breaks, and get on with my life.
I didn't do it this time, though.
Okay.
Because there was almost no difference. So at least from the visual standpoint.
Right.
I did do it last time because of the visual. Well, let's touch on Evernote then. It wouldn't be a show with you on it if we didn't talk about Evernote at all.
It's true.
So let's see. What are some of...
Have you heard of WorkChat?
No.
I'm kidding. Really?
I haven't. What is it part of Evernote? Because I just don't use chat in Evernote. Is that true?
Okay. So
are you kidding?
I'll explain. So probably over a year ago now, Evernote launched this feature called WorkChat, and it sort of more or less supplanted the native sharing functionality within Evernote. So if you wanted to share a note or a notebook with somebody, it would basically launch a chat conversation with, at the beginning would be a link to whatever you shared with them, and then you could sort of talk, you know, just like instant message style about whatever it was you shared. But the sort of ongoing joke was Evernote was extremely aggressive in promoting this feature. So people who even had used it already, like the iOS app and the Mac app in particular, I think, were just constantly hollering at you about trying WorkChat. Have you tried WorkChat? And so it got pretty annoying. But that was just sort of the joke. Have you tried WorkChat? Like, of course I have. If I haven't tried it, I don't want to, because you've mentioned it every 20 seconds for the last year.
See, this just goes to show I do not collaborate with anyone in my Evernote at all. It is literally like my archive for important stuff that's digital. Like it's where I will move stuff from Gmail archive into Evernote archive to keep longer term even. Mm-hmm. And also where I will keep articles or, you know, different pieces like that, where it's like, man, I really gotta learn how to do such and such with building my email list, or this with my, you know, tweaking my podcast, or stuff, you know, stuff you come across on the web in the big blob of, wow, all this stuff I could be doing better for myself or my business that don't have time to do right now. Where do I put that? That's Evernote for me.
Right.
So
it's your grain silo.
Yeah. And you saying, have you tried WorkChat? Like literally that passed me by and I feel like I missed something and yet didn't at the same time.
So do me a favor. If you're listening to Eric and I talk about this and you got that joke right when I made it before the explanation, let me and Eric know on Twitter or wherever. Cause I want to make sure that I'm not crazy, because I've experienced this with so many other people, but I want to make sure it's not just like us Uber Mac dorks who laugh about it. So say hello and let me know if you experience the Evernote, pushy nature of work chat promotion.
That's great. Well, so no, I haven't. And is it worth anything, or does it matter? If I'm already in Slack, does this matter?
Well, it lets you kind of, I use it sometimes like with my accountant, with a few other people, like I'll have this of a note that I'm like, all right, I've made this note containing this information and I want to discuss it with this person. And so I start a little conversation and it keeps the conversations separate insofar as let's say you and I are collaborating on a project, right? And there's one note in Evernote that's like the list of topics we're going to write about. And the second one is a list of people we want to email about becoming affiliates or whatever. And they're two different documents. We can have two separate conversations about each one for each document. So it's not like you and I are chatting on Skype or iMessage where it's just a single conversation. You can have multiple conversations with multiple people. You can invite and uninvite and add new content, that kind of thing. So it's not, I think it's fine. I don't hate it.
I can see a use for it.
Yeah, the original sharing stuff was a little more intuitive, if you ask me. And but it kind of forces you to do the chat thing now, which I'm like, eh. You used to be able to just go send this person a link to this thing, and they would just get it, and that would be that. And you would see in the little activity guy, so and so shared this note with you, and you could open it, and that would be it. But
now you have to talk to the person.
Yeah, now you have to walk up to them at the bar and hand them the note, ask how their kids are doing, even though all you wanted to do was send them a spreadsheet or whatever.
Wow.
So. I don't know. It's like I said, it's fine. I don't hate it. But WorkChat.
Okay.
You've heard of it now.
Yeah. Recent listeners to the show have also heard the blab recording of Steve Dotto, Mike Vardy, and myself talking about Evernote, which I, again, you said, man, sounds like I should have been there on Twitter. And I'm like, yes, you should have been.
Tongue in cheek.
Well, yeah. No, but had we see, here's the thing. Like, that was not a topic that I knew was going to happen that day. Mm. Otherwise, it would have made perfect sense to have you on. So you'll have to come on our biweekly lab show to do
Love
that.
To. Yeah.
But one, I got to get your perspective on something. We talked about this a bit on that conversation was, you know, somebody's opening Evernote for the first time. How do you get them started?
That's actually something I cover in the book, believe it or not. It's a really, really common question. So it's like this big blank canvas, right? Sort of like if you hand someone a new paper journal, like for Christmas or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I got you a paper journal. They open it up and go, what am I going to put in here? Like I could just journal in it, or I could use it for recipes, or I could use it for shopping lists or whatever. Like there's a million different things you can do with a blank book of paper. And Evernote's the same kind of problem, because especially when it's being sold as like heavily as it is by mm-hmm. enthusiastic users like me, like, oh, it's great. You can do all sorts of stuff with it. And you sit down and you're like, okay, like what? So the strategy that I've found to be the most effective in talking to people is like pick one thing that you can use Evernote for. That pick a hire it to solve a certain problem. So let's say you like to cook, right? And you want a place to keep recipes. Evernote's great for that. So let's just for the first month of using Evernote, just use it to collect recipes and use it to organize them. Get used to how the application works, how tagging works, how notebooks work, all that stuff. And if you find that like okay, now you're familiar with the guts of the application. Now add another use case, because I think the problem is the two-faceted deal is you sit down and you're like overcome with possibility, so you do nothing when you first encounter Evernote, or you shoehorn your entire life into it and now you can't find anything. And now it's just this over-engineered or completely disorganized pile of crap that you can't do anything with. And you were, you know, quietly crying because you were promised efficiency and accessibility of your data, and now you just got this big mountain of garbage you can't find anything in. So I think that the one part of life at a time approach makes it easier to ease into it. Because if you decide that Evernote isn't for you, which is a perfectly valid point to arrive at in your life, you aren't going to have to then take out 5 years of tax records that are all in PDFs and weirdly named files where the export function is a little bit inefficient sometimes, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's a very, very long-winded answer. But yeah, pick one thing. Like, you know, first start with your gardening, or you know, start with the shed you're going to build in your garage. Like use that as a resource bucket for, you know, use Evernote for a resource bucket for that project, or for recipes, or for your wine collection, or you know, whatever. It's like pick one thing and use Evernote for that for a while.
So the obvious follow-up question is what if I've been using Evernote for a long time, but it's a mess? How do I get it back into being tamed with all that stuff that's already in there, if you're saying to kind of pick, use one thing?
Well, if you've already put everything in there and you're not sure what to do, what I would recommend is take everything in every notebook. I mean, use this advice with caution, because it's not necessarily right, but it's, if someone sat down and was like, my Evernote account is a complete cluster and I want to make it sane, how do I do it? I'd be like, all right, take everything in every notebook and put it into a new notebook called DMZ and delete all of your tags. And so you now have this because the only way you're going to be able to do this, I think, is a real like scorched earth kind of, you got to leave everything, keep just the data and leave all the organizational cruft dead on the side of the road. And then when you have time, spend, you know, a Saturday evening with a glass of wine and go through and chop off 100 notes out of the DMZ and organize them in a sane fashion and sort of do that for however long you need to, depending on how many notes you have. And then hopefully by the time you're done with that, you will have learned your lesson about trying to over-organize Evernote from the beginning, which is a mistake a lot of people make. I made it. Everyone, I think, makes it. So you'll have the right amount of organization for you. You won't have 20,000 tags. You won't have 400. Well, you can't even have 400 notebooks. You won't have 200 notebooks that are about things that don't matter anymore. Like, you'll have built a organization system that will work going forward. So it's not the advice a lot of people want to hear, probably. But yeah. I think if you just blow everything away and start over, you'll be happier in the long run.
That's what I had to do. At one point, I just decided to do that. I literally sat there with my phone while watching TV one night and just kind of went notebook by notebook and just said, you know, what's in here that's really worth keeping?
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there was a lot of stuff in there that was like years old.
This is your shopping list from 3 years ago.
Yeah. Or here's an, I'm trying to think of the most obscure one there, because it was, you know, from being working in the social media realm and having, you know, that changing so quickly, it was like how to
use Plurk.
Yeah. How to get started on Google Plus is another one. Right. And I'm sure. So yeah, it was embarrassing. So I was glad it was by myself until now that I've confessed it out loud. But right. Yeah, that's, I agree. That's probably the only way that you can really do it. And honestly, again, I think the thing is just really deciding what one thing, and that's what I had to do, you know, decide what one thing I was going to use it for. And for me, again, it's that it's my own personal Wikipedia. Yeah. of my own life. So anything I throw in there, it's stuff that I want to keep. And to a certain extent, that's not where I put, you know, stuff. I'm not such a heavy duty user that I'm pulling out like tax records and scanning them and then putting them in Evernote. No, that we have a tangible file drawer for that, but I'm not opposed to that right. either.
Well, I think it depends on what, you know, how heavily do you want to invest your, or, you know, invest your time in putting your life into this.
Yeah.
This app. So,
well, and, yeah. and so, but what I will do is, for example, every time I get a new, I don't know, device or piece of tech hardware or not even that, like it's just something where I know I can go to the web and find the PDF of that manual. I'll throw that manual in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I can yep. search for it immediately on Evernote on my phone without having to go pull that up on my laptop and look and
exactly.
know. So,
yep. No, that's yet another thing Evernote's really great for. But yeah, saving manuals for stuff. I've got a boatload of those in my Evernote account too.
Well, right. Brett, it's been fun having you back. And this is probably one of the more enjoyable episodes that I've done in a while because it oh. was
well, thanks.
Less content. That is not what I meant. I meant it was more jokey than anything else. So yeah, Master Your Mac. Where should people go to get that?
If you just go to brettkelly.org, which is my internet homepage site thing.
It's right there.
It's right there.
And I have it open right now because I'm literally, as soon as I click.
I should make that more obvious how to get there. It's also at /masteryourmac with hyphens between your and Master Your Mac.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will put...
link in the show notes for
I'll put the link in the show notes. Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
And that'll work. Excellent. So, and again, I'm jumping on this. I get no affiliate anything for this. I'm just telling you. $5 once a month, you too can master your Mac for just $5 a month.
Ding! Like a really shiny white smile with a little sparkle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brett, thank you for being back on the show. This has been fun.
Okay.
I truly hope that if you were a creator of something, that you appreciated Brett's honesty about his failure with his product that he launched and that it didn't meet his expectations and what he did with that moving forward, what lessons he learned. I also hope that if you're a Mac user in any way, you got something out of the two quick tips and conversation that I had with Brett about that. And I do hope you'll consider, like I have done, jumping on his Master Your Mac email course. And again, I want to say thank you to Nosby for supporting this episode of Beyond the To-Do List. Make sure to go grab that 30-day free trial of Nosby Pro for you and a partner. Go to nozbe.com/TODO. If you are not using a task manager, what are you doing? What are you waiting for? Go grab this now. And if you are using one, again, you owe it to yourself to try something out and see if it works for you. Head on over to nozbe.com/TODO. Grab it. Let me know at the show notes for this episode that you've done that. beyondthetodolist.com/130. It'll send me an email, and then I will send you my Nosby template for my morning routine. Hope to hear from you, and I will see you next episode.
Beyond the To-Do List is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx.